Welcome back, witch bitches, to the Philip Deal podcast. Well, Armageddon still isn't here. And that's okay. That's just fine. Because you know what it does? It gives us another day to produce chaos and fuckery. I thought today we would talk about Jesus. We're going to talk about Jesus Christ. And we're going to talk about Donald Trump. Yes. Now, I want to make it very, very clear to all of my new listeners, this is not a podcast about politics. This is not going to be about what kind of shitbag Donald Trump is and how he should have gone to jail on January 7th, the day after he tried to coup this government, bring his fascist dictatorship into power. This is not about that. We're not going to go down the political route. I think I just made it very clear to you how I stand on that matter. Today we're going to talk about why Donald Trump is Jesus Christ from a comparative religious standpoint. You see, I hate Christians and I hate Christianity. I've been flagged on TikTok and other social media for saying that I have a very strong distaste and dislike for Christians. And I believe in this country, at least in America, I think I have the freedom of speech to say I don't like a particular group of people because I think they're hypocrites. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. Now, on the liberal side, on the crazy, far less left crazy, what do they call them? Communist these days? Marxist? For all of the Marxist liberals out there that can't handle being offended. Of course, most of the fights that I get into on TikTok is actually with people who consider themselves liberal. What the fuck? You know, I never have any Donald Trump supporters coming over or any conservative Christians or any of those people. None of those people ever attack me on social media. What's hysterical is that people that attack me consider themselves to be liberal. So they call me a misogynist, they call me a chauvinistic pig, they say I'm homophobic, they say I'm transphobic, which is all not true. Oh, and my favorite one, I'm called a colonizer and a racist and a cultural appropriator. So let me tell you, everybody, yeah, I can't win. I just can't win. No matter what I do, I'm fucked. One way or another, I just can't make anybody happy, but that's okay because my job is to talk shit. That's what I'm all about, talking shit. So today I thought I would talk shit about Christianity and about Donald Trump and why I really feel. So here's the thing about witches and pagans and everybody else. Anybody who is not Christian, Jewish or Muslim, okay? A lot of witch bitches out there basically can't understand or comprehend how Christianity became this dominating world religion, you know, like how we got here. Well, first thing, I just want to put this out there. Christianity is a political organization. It always has been, folks. Always has been from the very, very jump. Christianity and the Jesus person, whether that person was a real person or not, which is highly debatable that that person was ever a real person, has always been a political movement. It's not a religious spiritual movement. It was a political movement from the very beginning. And we're going to go into that and we're going to kind of like compare the rise of the Jesus message and Christianity with the rise of QAnon and Donald Trump's message. We're going to do a little comparison, you know, just a little friendly comparison between the two. Try to get it kind of gives you like a real-time, real-world view about how political empires and structures are built and how maybe 2,000 years ago, everybody will be worshiping Donald Trump as the king savior of the world. And maybe the very next religion major religion to take over this planet might be this whole, well, I know that, you know, QAnon has been debunked and people aren't really into that anymore as much as they used to, about how there's a new ideology coming up and how Christianity is once again reinventing itself. See, that's the interesting thing about Christianity. It has the ability to reinvent itself. So that maybe, as a prophet of Jesus, Donald Trump, when he takes back over office, it's very possible, everybody. It's very, very possible that Donald Trump is going to run again and that he could be elected president again. It's very, very possible. That's a very real possibility for all you people out there who say, no, it can never happen. Well, you're dumbasses, because it did happen the first time. It can happen a second time. And I'm sorry for all the liberal people out there who are just waiting for him to go to jail. I'm sorry. Donald Trump is never going to go to jail. He's never going to go to jail for the crimes he's committed. He is completely protected from all the crimes that he has been committed, because if they were going to take him down, they would have taken him down by now. The person isn't going anywhere. So whether you like it or not, you are never going to see Donald Trump answer for his crimes. So you can just go ahead and forget about it. Forget about talking about it. So the reason why this dialogue persists is because Americans are stupid. Americans are fat. They're lazy. They're arrogant. They're uneducated. And today, history doesn't matter, folks. Science doesn't matter, folks. Facts about situations don't matter, folks. We live in a time where something is true because you believe it's true, because you feel like it's true. I feel like this is true, so that is the truth about reality. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous times. But anyway, I am kind of a conspiracy theorist. I do believe in the Anunnaki. I definitely believe that, you know, aliens came here and fucked with our DNA. I do believe in a shadow government. I do believe that everything that you see on television, I do believe that all of the news that you see and all of these baboons going in and out of their offices, pushing paperwork and passing legislation, the Supreme Court, there's another group of people that control this, okay? And it's not the people that you see on TV. The people you see on TV, it's just a front. That's just one big fucking front for what's really going on. So if you want to know what's going on, what's really, really going on, you're going to stick around and listen to what I have to say. And if it makes you mad, it makes you mad. And you know what? You can be mad about it. You can go die mad about it. But as long as I have this little platform here to run my mouth, well, let's go ahead and get started, folks. Go ahead, grab a hold of your ass, spread your cheeks, run to the bathroom, go grab your vanilla chai soy latte enema, because I've got mine right here, and I'm still waiting to take my morning shit, and you know that until I get my morning shit, I'm gonna be a motherfucking pissant. So, on your mark, get set, detonate. So one of my idols in life, George Carlin, I think this is a quote. I'm not sure if it's going to be accurate. Please, I want you to fact check everything that I say. I'm going to warn you when I start giving my personal opinion. Most of what I'm going to say today is an opinion piece. It's the world as I see it, as I understand it, from observation, folks, okay? So I want you to understand that. But what George Carlin used to say is, do not underestimate the power of stupid people in large numbers, right? So we need to go ahead and get something out of the way from the get-go, which is Christianity is a cult. It just happens to be the biggest cult. And the people who love Donald Trump and want to see him in office and perform all of his miraculous feats to turn our country into a white dominated, Christian dominated country, or keep it white, make it more white, enshrine its whiteness eternally, protect all the white people, and protect Christianity, make Christianity the state empire religion again. All of those people there, it's a cult. It is a personality cult. Now, that being said, I know that you guys know that I was born and raised a Jehovah's Witness. Yes, if you don't know who Jehovah's Witnesses are, they're the people that show up on Saturday morning while you're trying to watch cartoons, pushing their Bible and their Watchtower magazines in your face that want you to convert to the religion. I was born and raised in that environment, so I know all about cults. See, in order to understand how Christianity and its rise and how Donald Trump and his rise became so popular and why it carries so much force is you have to understand the dynamics of cult mentality and cult behavior. Okay? So I would recommend that you get on Google. I would recommend that you get on YouTube and do a search for cult mentality or cult behavior or cults, because that's what these things are. And personality cults and cults that revolve around a single person are the most problematic. You know, I didn't even know what the word problematic meant. I never heard the word problematic in my life before I got on TikTok. Like, what is everybody talking about? Problematic? What the fuck is that word? Somehow that word problematic made it into, like, I don't know, the top five words used on television over the past couple of years. But the problem with personality cults is here you got some guy who comes along and he has this kind of like message, right? He's got a message that he's trying to get out to the world. Well, by luck, okay, by sheer utter luck, just by chance. It takes the right person at the right time in history to show up and run their mouth and be able to catch the attention of large groups of people, sway their opinions based on their own disparity, because that's very important, based on the disparity of the people. A cult leader comes along, and based on the disgruntled mindset of everyone around, they're able to lift up this group of people, make them feel special, make their followers feel special, make their followers feel elite, make their followers feel like they are the underdog. And that in order for their lives, in order for the followers' lives to get better and to change, to feel more safe, to have security in life, to have a place to go after you die, to be saved, that you got to listen to this message and you got to follow the message. So I want to go back for a second, and we're going to do it like this. We're going to go back about 500 years before the supposed birth of this person called Christ. And we're going to talk about Buddha. My ass is actually going to drag Buddha into this conversation. Only I could do that. Dragging poor old Buddha along for this conversation about Donald Trump. But there is actually a similarity also between Buddha, Jesus, and Trump. Now, stick with me here. Okay, I need you to have an open mind. If you are only here to criticize everything I have to say, If you're only here to find fault with what I have to say, this is not going to help you, folks. So if you don't like what I've said up until this point in time, it's better just to go away. Don't listen to the rest of this because it's not going to, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind here. Okay. Like I said, this is an opinion, you know, just like, what's that asshole's name? Ben Shapiro, that motherfucker over there. This isn't my opinion. It's just my opinion. Okay. So you can take it with a grain of salt. But how did Buddha become Buddha, or how did the Buddhist religion take off? How did it get such a stronghold? Because as you and I both know, there are tons of talented people that come around every single day. There are great philosophers and great thinkers, great scientists, people that come along every single day. They have contributions to give to the world that could make the world a better place. But there's always something about one person who is able to just take the cake. And Buddha was able to take the cake in India. Now, Buddha was born in a small kingdom, which they believe is in Nepal or around Nepal. And when Buddha became very disenfranchised with the world by leaving his kingdom, going out on the street and seeing someone who was sick, someone who was old, and someone who was dead, and recognized that this world is full of suffering. Okay, I'm going to give you a little, we're going to learn things today. I'm going to try to educate you a little bit. I'm going to try to give you some edumacation. I'm going to try to enlighten you the best I can, kind of a little bit about a whole bunch of different things. So Buddha decided, instead of being a prince, he was going to go off into the wilderness, and he was going to find a guru, and he was going to practice yoga, and he was going to practice the austerities, and he was going to basically do that until he found the answer to the resolution to suffering, how to resolve this problem called human suffering. That's what Buddha did. So after going through all these austerities and all these different yoga groups and all of that stuff, and almost dying from starving himself to death, you know, eating a grain of rice a day and like a teaspoonful of water, sitting underneath the Bodhi tree, he has his cosmic awakening. He turns the wheel of Dharma and it comes to him, I have discovered the root of suffering. I understand how to resolve suffering. And now I'm going to get up and I'm going to go tell the world, right? And then the rest is history. So Buddha, as an enlightened master, as a spiritual master, decided to take his insight into the human condition and his insight into the universe and start sharing it with people. Now, and let me tell you something. Let's talk about religion for a second as far as good religions and bad religions. Like religions that are worth a shit and religions that are not. Okay, because a lot of people like to compare Jesus Christ and Buddha with one another as being these great masters, right? Well, let me tell you something. How many Buddhists have you ever heard of getting on a bus and strapping a bomb to themselves and blowing themselves up because they're going to go to heaven and be able to deflower 72 virgins? How many Buddhists stockpile guns and weapons or show up at churches and synagogues and basically blow everybody away? How many Buddhists do you hear of? Do you see what I'm saying? I'm trying to get a point across to you. Because you can judge the quality of a religion, because this podcast is all about religion and philosophy. You can judge the quality of a religion by the people that practice it. Listen to me again. If you don't walk away with any other insight than this, you can judge a religion as to whether or not it's a shit religion or a good religion based on the quality of the people that actually follow this shit. So if we wanted to literally say what is the best religion, what would we consider to be the highest quality religion in the world, like one really worth understanding, studying, and putting into practice? Well, I would say, well, Buddhism. Boom. There you go. Hands down, the Buddha. You want to learn about yourself. You want to learn about your mind. You want to understand the human condition. You want to alleviate suffering. You want to be able to find release, nirvana, and feel free and good and happy and be able to do good things in the world, develop compassion for other people. Be a Buddhist, okay? Let's compare that to Christians. Christians are shit. And so the problem is because of the dogma, because of the things that Christians teach, what they believe is what you get. So you can 100% compare religions like Buddhism and Christianity. And there's a lot of people out there, Unitarian Universalist, these people who they claim the liberal Marxist people and all of that, the people who get really, really angry when you talk shit about Islam and what kind of crap religion that is too, because of the level of violence and because of the level of savagery and because of also the political involvement of that religion and the empire that was built, the political empire structure that was built off of Muhammad's crazy behavior and his crazy teachings. When you point these things out and you say, there's nothing that makes any damn sense about Christianity's doctrines and teachings, and there's nothing that makes any damn sense about the rise of Muhammad, his political government that he set up, and then all of the religious stuff, you know. And what's interesting about Christianity and Islam is both of these religions completely appropriated other cultures. You know, they came along with a political message, and then they had the ability to basically suck in like a black hole and appropriate many, many different aspects of different cultures in order to create what would be a functional religion or a functional societal structure, because that's what it is. Religions create a moral and ethical code that's in harmony with a political agenda by empires that rule the world, and they go hand in hand, everybody. Religions and politics go hand in hand. They'll never be separate. The separation of church and state, that is an illusion, separation of church and state. It's a total illusion because religion and politics both serve a purpose, and they walk hand in hand with one another. Where it's empires and the political job to keep the rich rich and make them richer, and keep a particular ethnic group of people in power, because that's what it is. That's the structure. It's a hierarchy, okay? The religion's job is to come around and keep everybody pacified and reinforce that the political structure is good. You can see that with the Russian Orthodox Christians that are for Putin, pro-Putin, the pro-Putin people, the Orthodox Christians in Russia that support the political affairs of Putin. That's it. And when you get completely disgusted by seeing how religious leaders bend over and spread their ass cheeks for government's big old cocks, then you finally, you know, you say, well, you know what? There's got to be something else. There's got to be something better than this. I smell fish. There's something wrong with this. I've got to figure this whole thing out, right? Well, let's get back to Buddha for a second. So Buddha had a very long, illustrious career as a wandering mystic teacher, okay? He was smart. Buddha was very smart because he set up sanghas, or he set up groups or monks. Everywhere he went, he was able to establish not only a fan base and followers, subscribers, whatever you want to call them, but he was able to, in a very, very smart and strategic way, set up a following, and he set up a following everywhere he went. So when the man died, there was tons of people that had committed to memory all of his teachings and were able to continue on teaching his message, and that would flourish over time. Spread from India up into the Himalayas, all the way through China, all the way to Japan, everywhere. Travel east. So Buddha was very, very smart in the sense that he was able to lay a foundation to keep his teachings in order. Okay? Now we're going to leave Buddhism now. The thing about Buddha's message and Buddha's teaching and why it was so important, why it rose to power, here you go. Why Buddhism became so popular is because of the caste system in India. Because the Vedas, okay, some of the most ancient writings and hymns written from the ancient world, that later became, and then the Upanishads, after that the Mahabharata, after that all of the different teachings that come with Hinduism. We'll do another podcast one day about everything yoga and everything Hinduism. I can't wait to talk about yoga and Hinduism and absolutely rip apart Americans and their yoga practice. We will get there eventually. But what people were really mad about is that there was this whole situation with the caste system. In case you didn't know, in India and in Hinduism, there are classes of individuals, literally classes of individuals. There are the people who are the kings, there are the people that are the warriors, there are people that are the householders, or I guess you could say your merchant class, all of the blue-collar people that work, and then there are the untouchables, the scumbags of society, the people that are the lowest rung of society. They're an entire group of people. So there's a very, very strong hierarchical system of people in India. And Buddha's message did the same thing that Jesus' message did. It spoke to the disenfranchised. It spoke to people who suffered the most. We got to be very clear about this, folks. Buddha's message struck the hearts of the average person because those people were the people who were suffering the most. And when Buddha came along and said, "I know all of you guys are suffering over here." Well, guess what? You don't have to suffer any longer because I figured this thing out. Well, sign me up. Sign me up. You know how to end my suffering. I'm going to listen to anything you have to say. Please tell me about this ending of suffering. I want to hear about it. And so that's how Buddha's spiritual message, I think, really, really took hold. There are very unique aspects to Buddha's teachings that were separate from, varied off, strayed away from Hinduism. And it's Hinduism is not the accurate term, okay? We're just going to say Hinduism today. To traditional classical Hinduism and that caste system, his message came as a relief to people who were suffering. And his message is just as relevant today to people who are suffering as it was 2,500 years ago. So if you want to study true spirituality, go pick up a book by the Dalai Lama. I'm a huge fan of the Dalai Lama. I really am. I really love Buddhism. So it has my a stamp of approval and endorsement as a religion that is actually worth learning anything about. Okay, so now let's leave Buddha. Now we're going to fast forward, and we're going to fast forward to the whole Jerusalem, Jesus, and all of the Jews. Now we're going to fast forward here, and we're just going to do a very quick comparison. Well, who did Jesus Christ's message really, really speak to? Did it not speak to the downtrodden? Did it not speak to the lowest classes? Are you listening to me here? Are you listening to me here? That message spoke to the lowest classes of people, the most uneducated people. Why did G? Wh There were lots of people that said they were the Messiah. There are a lot of people that came along and said, "Look, I'm the Messiah, and follow me, yada yada yada." But this guy Jesus, he was unique. Now, biblical writers want to say that Jesus, this man named Jesus, was unique because he was the heir to the throne of David. You have to understand. I'm going to just assume that most Americans that are listening to this podcast have a general understanding of Christianity in general. I'm going to try to keep this very, very general, okay? But the whole claim to fame that this man, Jesus, had, according to the biblical writers, that the people that wrote the Bible or pushed this agenda, this political agenda, was that Jesus was the heir to the throne of David. That means this man had the right to take the throne. This was all about the throne. This was about government. This was about leadership. This was about kingship. This was about reestablishing the superiority of the Jews over all other people. Because that's really the Jewish message. We're God's chosen people, and all y'all are shit. So it's you know what's, let me go ahead and say something that's going to be super offensive. I know this is offensive, but I just got to throw it out there. I like pointing this out to people, okay? Because people get really, really mad when it comes to talking about, let's say, ethnicity and supremacy of ethnicity. You know, we talk about it's not okay for one race of people or one ethnic group of people to elevate itself over another group of people, that that's wrong, that that's immoral, that we're all equal. Yet we allow Jewish people to do it every single day. Not anti-Jew, I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm just saying that when you read the Bible, the big message that comes through is that Jews are God's chosen people and everybody else ain't shit. Okay? Now tell me how that's not elevating one ethnic group over another group of people. But see, Christians inherited that arrogance. Christians inherited that attitude that now Christians are God's chosen people. We are the superior people. We are the chosen ones. You see that whole mentality that comes through loud and clear. If you've ever read anything about the Old Testament, if you read the Old Testament in the Bible, that superiority, that attitude of arrogance that Jews have, that we're God's chosen people and everybody else ain't shit, Christians inherited that. So it's not unique to Christians, and it's not unique to white Christians to believe that they're superior. It's not. That was something that was a hand-me-down. And, of course, you know, also Islam, Muslims inherited that superiority complex from all of that too, all the Abrahamic religions. So now getting back to this guy named Jesus, right? His claim to fame, according to Bible writers, is that he is the heir to the throne of David. But now we're going to throw a spin on it. We're going to throw a twist on this, right? So Jesus came along, this guy named Jesus. Now, I got to be really, really upfront and honest with you, and I'm going to go ahead and put it out there to you. I am not anti-Jesus message. I'm not. Matter of fact, the Gospel of Matthew is one of my favorite spiritual texts, up there with the Tao Te Ching, up there with the Bhagavad Gita, up there with the Yoga Sutras, excuse me, and all other great literary spiritual teachings. The message of Jesus Christ in the Gospel of Matthew is inspiring. It really, really is. Because here's this guy who came along, he had every single right, to say, I'm the king of this kingdom, we're going to overthrow the government, and I'm going to sit on this throne. But he didn't want that. He had bigger aspirations than that. He said, you know what, people? This kingdom that you want established, this is not a physical kingdom. You're looking to reestablish something physical, something that is destroyed, something that is perishable. You know, he was able to speak to the people in parables. He spoke to people who were trodden down, beat up, lowest rungs of the population, lowest education level, and he was able to speak to them and teach them in ways that they could understand in stories. Jesus taught the people by using stories that they could easily comprehend. And he got his message through loud and clear, which is, this is a spiritual, God's kingdom is an ever-present spiritual reality that can be accessed at any time by anyone just by closing your eyes, saying a prayer, and putting faith in God, putting faith in this kingdom, this other place that is so much better than the world that you live in now that you're suffering in. So this kind of like, this man who was really a, what I would say, a Hellenized, apocryphal Jewish teacher, this mystic, this transcendental mystic, very Hellenized Jew, and someone who was coming through the line, I guess you could say, of the great biblical prophets like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, all of the Hebrew prophets that came along spreading the warning about, you know, the destruction and the end of civilization as we know it. You know, Jesus came along in a line of prophets that were, they were all sharing the same message. And he was unique, he was special. And he said, you know what, folks, you've been looking at this wrong the whole time. This has nothing to do with a physical kingdom. This kingdom is an ever-present transcendental reality that you need to grasp and comprehend. Now, eventually, the people who were his followers figured this out, and they realized the message. They realized the message of this being a spiritual thing and not a physical thing. But not until Jesus pissed off everybody. He pissed off the Sadducees. He pissed off the Pharisees. He made angry all the little pawn leaders that the Roman Empire had set out to keep everybody under control. They went to Caesar. They went to the Roman government and said, look, this guy's getting ready to overthrow the government. He's talking about overthrowing the government. He's trying to create a coup. He's got this following, and the following that he has are these people, these angry people, and you got to be really, really careful because this guy is literally, he could overthrow this whole system here with the amount of power that he's gained. What do? They killed him. They crucified him. And the man lost his life. And we can just kind of end it right there. This man showed up. He had an inheritance to the kingdom, to the throne of David. He decided that he was going to speak a transcendental message to people. And then after he taught people this transcendental message, it got him killed. And after he died, his followers continued to push this message. And we're going to take a little bit of break here because we've got a lawnmower going on outside. And I want to take a break, have some coffee, and come back when this passes. So you guys, hang tight. We're going to pick up right where we left off. Okay, everybody, we're back. Well, let's just say that I'm making my little podcast here up in my room, sitting up in my room, just like Brandy. I'm sitting up in my room, making my little podcast on Anchor. Lucky enough that I can get my podcast distributed to so many different outlets. Thank you, Anchor. Really, really. It's so easy. You know what? Let me tell you, it's so easy to create a podcast with Anchor. I'd recommend anybody do it. Anybody who wants to sit around and talk shit in their room, like me, and have their cup of coffee, and tell the world exactly what they think, and then get it out there into a lot of platforms, is very, very good. Very good. Okay, so we're going to go back. We're going to pick up where we left off. We're going to talk about Donald Trump, how Donald Trump and Jesus Christ and how Buddha, how they got their message out there, and who are the people that listen to this message? Well, in Jesus' time, it was the people who were beat up, trodden down, people who were sick of paying their taxes, people who were treated like garbage, And the same thing in Buddha's time, same thing back in Buddha's day. You know, people were upset. They were sick of being treated like shit. They were looking for something else. They were looking for something new. They were looking for something to free them of suffering, alleviate their suffering. And they were sick of the caste system, and they were sick of the Brahmins, and they were sick of empty ritual that had no heart, no feeling, no passion. Same thing with Jesus' time. The people that listened to him were the bottom of the barrel rung people, lowest level of education, very mad, very upset, didn't want to pay taxes, was tired of no passion when it came to religion and spirituality. And so Jesus' message became very, very popular. And what had happened was they killed the guy, right? They crucified him. And that's where Jesus' story ends. But what happened? Now, these followers of his, the apostles, you know, they realized that Jesus was trying to get across this message of spirituality, and that people needed to really, to change their life, they really needed to abandon this idea that the kingdom, and this is for the Jews right now, because Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was a Jew. He came to talk to the Jews. Those were his people. He came as a reformer to Judaism. He did not come to establish another religion. He never came to establish another religion. He showed up to reform and enlighten his people, which were the Jews. So now these guys, right, the 11 of them, and then they picked another 12th one because Judas went and yeeted himself out of existence. They said, you know what? Jesus has all these people that have been following him for the past 3 years. Now, they say that Jesus was around for about 3 years, traveling here, traveling there, just like Buddha did in India, traveling here, traveling there, getting his followers, getting his subscribers, getting the people that followed his message and all of this. And they said, we have to keep this movement going. We can't allow this movement to die. So we're going to continue on, keeping on, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to keep the Christian movement going. Now, as everybody knows, back in the first century and the second century and the third century, Christianity was a very, very, very diverse group of people. It was extremely diverse. And what we have today as Christianity, here's your little history lesson, is at the Nicene Council, when it was decided what was dogma, what was official doctrine, and what was not, okay, the Christians that were politically minded, that said, you know what, we have a golden opportunity here. We have a golden opportunity to seize power. That, you know, we have got this Roman emperor who wants to make our belief system the state religion, the empire religion. We have to do this thing right, and we have to be very strategic about this. So what they did is they chose the letters and the teachings of Paul, the Apostle Paul. They said, okay, well, there's all these different versions of Christianity. We could run with any of them. Which one makes the most sense, okay? What can we sell the people? What can we sell the people? What will they buy? Well, they decided to go with the teachings of the Apostle Paul. And once it was decided that the dogma that was laid down by Paul, who was also Roman, once they decided that this guy's message, it fit their agenda because it was like it was Jewish and it was Roman and it was about converting everybody and bringing everybody into the fold, and Jesus' message isn't just for the Jews, it's for all people. Oh, and you know what? If you're not Jewish and you want to believe in this Christian stuff, you don't have to get circumcised, because that was a big thing back then. It's like, well, yeah, Christianity is great, but you're not going to clip my dick. Okay, well, when Paul came around and said, you know what, you don't have to clip your dick, because circumcision is the circumcision of God, and the kingdom of God happens in the heart. We've got the circumcision of the heart. We don't have to worry about anything down below. And then they were like, oh, okay, I can handle this. As long as you don't chop off the tip of my dick, then I'm willing to go along with this thing called Christianity. So the people who are in control decided that they were going to go with this brand, of Pauline Christianity. And then with their power, they were just going to annihilate and wipe out everything in their path that disagreed with them. So that's how all of the Gnostics, all of the different groups of Christians, they all died out because they were eventually persecuted, driven out, and killed if they proclaimed anything other than the official state religion, the Christianity that had the stamp of approval by the empire. It's the empirical religion to get everybody on the same page morally, ethically. This is how we're going to run the play. Okay, this is how we're going to run things in government, and this is how we're going to run things in the spiritual world. Everybody needs to get on board, and if you're not willing to get on board, we're just going to kill you. And that's how this thing went down. It's that simple. That's the story. The story is from the time of this man, Jesus, if he was a person, if he was a real person, it's highly debatable whether or not this person ever existed. You know, I could say, sure, I believe Jesus came in the flesh. Because, you know, some of this shit you just can't make up. You know, so let's say that there was an apocalyptic, Hellenized Jewish rabbi that came along who happened to have the bloodline to establish the kingdom and bring back Jerusalem, and decided in lieu of this Jerusalem thing, he found it more profitable to try to reform the Jewish faith so that people would look to a more transcendental reality, a transcendental kingdom, the kingdom of God, okay, rather than be so focused on a physical kingdom. Brought a lot of people happiness, brought a lot of people relief. It gave people like purpose, gave them a purpose. You know, the reason why I'm suffering is because when this suffering is over, when my life comes to an end, I have been promised, because I'm one of God's chosen people, I'm a child of God. Doesn't matter what anybody else says about me. Other people's opinions about me don't matter. I'm a child of God. I've been born again by the Holy Spirit. And when I die, I'm going to heaven. And fuck all y'all, I bought my ticket, I'm on the crazy train, as soon as this thing is over, I am going straight to heaven. That's where I'm going, because Jesus said so, and I believe the guy. See what I'm saying? So it was very easy for people who were of low education, who didn't know any better, to go along with these teachings and follow these teachings and create kind of like a movement. We'll call it the Jesus Movement. And as we said before, when the empire decided to make Christianity the state religion, then you have the people who are in power, who are in control, who are able basically to dictate everything to everyone else, how we're going to behave, what is the truth, what is not the truth. And you get what? You get the first bishops, right? And then eventually you got the Orthodox, because the Orthodox Christians came first. Orthodoxy is the oldest institutionalized form of Christianity. If you really want to understand Christianity, as far as institutionalized Christianity is concerned, you got to look at the Greek Orthodox. You have to look at the Ethiopian Orthodox. You have to look at the Eastern Orthodox people. You have to look at the Coptic Church. You need to look at Orthodox religion. Orthodoxy is about as the Orthodox Christian the tradition that is orthodox within the Christian faith is the oldest form of Christianity, not the Catholics. Roman Catholicism came next. When the Pope or when the Bishop of Rome decided that everybody else ain't shit and I alone have the ability to make up the rules about what is and what is not acceptable dogma, well, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to do that, and if you don't like it, you don't like it. You can be mad about it. You can die mad about it. I'm going to be the Pope now, so the Bishop of Rome becomes the Pope, and now we've got Roman Catholicism in opposition to all the other Christians that are Orthodox in the world, and so there you go. They're not in communion with one another over literally one phrase of dogma. The Roman Catholic Church goes on to become the Holy Roman Empire, and then, you know, history is history. Christianity goes forth, and it conquers, and it destroys, and it colonizes, and it divides everything in the entire world. Think about, you want to be mad, don't be mad at me. Don't be mad at me for pointing out the obvious. If you want to be mad about an organization, be mad at Catholics. It's funny that Joe Biden is a Catholic, isn't it? Isn't it funny that he's a good Catholic? That he's got the Pope's endorsement. It's funny that Joe Biden is Catholic. But look at the Catholic Church and look at the atrocities caused by the Catholic Church and their belief system all over the world. It's absolutely disgusting. The institutionalized pedophilia, the mass rape and abuse of children, of boys, little boys and girls, by Catholic priests and nuns. In Europe, they've got these cathedrals, and underneath these cathedrals, there is like mass graves of infants, of nuns that were raped by monks, had children, and then yeeted out of existence and buried. So we've got cover-ups of tons of nuns who were sexually active when they were supposed to devote their pussies to Jesus, okay? You got all of this fuckery going on in the church, and it's on the inside. Christianity really is rotten. That's really what it is. It's really, really a rotten religion. And the reason why it's rotted is because it gives people a pass to behave however they want to behave. Now, stick with me here, folks. You can be forgiven for anything. If you're a Catholic or you're Orthodox, you can be forgiven for anything. You can go out and do the most atrocious crimes against humanity. War, rape, child molestation, everything. Institutionalized, but you can still be forgiven. That is a very, very, very dangerous, insidious dogma that lays at the heart of the Christian faith. What lay at the heart of the Christian faith is you can do whatever you want, and if you feel bad about it in some kind of way and you ask for forgiveness, there is a priest that will absolve you of your sins. Now, as far as Martin Luther is concerned, and the Protestant Reformation, and where most all Christianity today is some kind of branch of the Protestant faith, or the Protestant view on the Bible and God, I tell you, one of the biggest fuck ups in history is publishing the Bible and the mass amounts of stupid people in the world being able to acquire a Bible. That's a really big problem. You know, back in the Orthodox, the Orthodox today, the Catholics, those people, they had priests that were educated in performing the sacraments, of handing out the Eucharist, of standing on the pulpit, of interpreting the Bible for the people. They knew what the Bible really said. But it doesn't matter what the Bible said, actually, because when the Catholic priest or the Orthodox priest stands up in front of the congregation to give his sermon, he's going to give sermon based on what he feels that congregation needs to do to stay cohesive, to keep a cohesive church, which makes a cohesive Christendom, which also makes a cohesive government. You see how it works? It's why America's fallen apart, because the family structure has fallen apart. Strong families create strong churches and strong communities, and strong communities create strong states, and strong states create a strong nation, and the disintegration of the family, the disintegration of the structure of the family, father, mother, children's, the dogs, the house, the man going out and being the breadwinner, the women staying at home doing all the cooking and cleaning and having this kind of like, you know, nuclear thing where everybody knows their role and everybody stays in line. When all of that fell apart, that's when everything started to go to shit. Well, everything's always been shit. But that's when we really started to lose it. So the structure of the family breaking down can really be that could be accredited to what you see today. But what happened was, when the Protestants came along, they got a hold of a copy of the Bible, then suddenly any Joe Schmo schmuck on the side of the road that had the ability to read, I mean, you had to be able to read first. You probably didn't have to read very well. But if you had the ability to read and hold a Bible in your hand, suddenly you were a prophet of God. You could read the Bible for yourself. You could make up your own damn mind about what the Bible says, and fuck the church, fuck Catholics, fuck the Pope. You know, we're not going to deal with those people anymore. We don't want a third party advocating on our behalf to God anymore. We're going to advocate for ourselves. And that's where you get all of these different diverse groups of Christianity, from Jehovah's Witnesses to Holiness, a Southern Baptist, Protestant, Episcopalian, all of these, Church of England, all of these people. The branches of Christianity that broke away from Orthodoxy is Roman Catholicism, and then after Roman Catholicism, all of the other branches of Christianity that you see today. So let me ask all of the good Christians out there that might be mad about everything I'm saying. Do you really think that you have the true religion that Jesus Christ taught if everything you know about the Bible was filtered down through Catholicism, and before that, the Orthodox Church, and before that, the small group of Christians that were able to seize the attention of a Roman Empire that made the religion a state religion? Do you really think that your religion is the true religion? Or how about this? Do you really feel like the teachings that you hold, your dogmas that you hold to be true, do you really think they're authentic in any kind of way? I don't see how someone could take themselves seriously if the religion that they've been born and raised on and inherited came directly channeled through the Roman Catholic Church. So if you want to understand Christianity the way it was practiced prior to Roman Christianity, Roman Catholicism, then go study the Orthodox Church, because those are the oldest teachings that you can point to as being old. And then before that, you have to look at all of the diverse groups of Christians and Gnostic Christians and all of the other different cult sects that existed in the first and the second and the third century before they were wiped out by all the Orthodox and by the Catholics. So Christianity from the get-go, as we've established, because I'm winding up my little speech on Christianity, from the very get-go, this was a political movement. It took a man, a Jewish man, who could have been on the throne. He didn't take the throne. He taught a message of peace, love, hope, the kingdom of God. The people that continued that message going after he was crucified, that kind of snowballed. It became very, very popular. And then eventually it becomes a state religion, and everything is history, okay? And it just goes on and on and on and on, like Erykah Badu sang, just on and on and on and on. And that's how Christianity became a world religion. What's so interesting is that any religion could have become the number one world religion based on its time that it came in history. Because like I said, the right person has to come along at the right time in history in order to create these massive upheavals in society. Let's fast forward, folks. Let's come all the way down to the time of Barack Obama. Because people who are liberal like to say, man, how did we get here? How did Donald Trump ever become president? Well, we elected Barack Obama. And that was a big turning point in this country. Electing a black man to be president of the United States was a huge pinnacle turning point for this country. Because let's be honest, folks, this country is racist as fuck. But it's not just America. I want to dare say, and this is a profound realization I had after studying religion and philosophy for a very long time, that ethnicity and race and the superiority of one ethnic group over another is the foundation of all the problems in the world. When you really want to get down to it, everybody, when you want to get to the nitty-gritty, when you want to get to the heart of what is the sickness in the human condition that makes us behave the way we behave, it's racism across the board. It's racism and ethnic purity, and my ethnicity is better than your ethnicity, and I want your land. Boom. That's it. And if you see it this way, then you can understand that the Bible is very dangerous, because it was the Bible that gave license to, even in the Christian scriptures, it was Christianity that said slavery is okay. Slavery is okay. We can all be Christians, but you can still maintain your slaves and slavery. Yes, everybody, that's in the Bible. Slavery is something that is condoned in the Christian Bible. So giving that, you know, racism is real, and forcing people to convert to Christianity that don't want to convert, they were just fine, they had their lives prior to Christians showing up, they had their own religious cults, they had their own religious traditions, whatever it was, in Africa, in the New World, in the Caribbean, in Mexico, in North America. Well, we're just going to show up and we're just going to take whatever we want. And that is a white person thing. You know, we need to talk about white people in a little bit. I'm going to talk about white people. I'm going to talk about how fucked up white people are. And it's a real shame, because it's a complete blind side as to why white people, there are white people that don't understand why black people are mad. They just don't understand why they're mad. There are white people that just don't understand what's wrong with these Native Americans. You know, why are they so mad? Completely clueless as to how the world actually works. But when I say that racism is at the heart of the world's problems, and it is really at the heart of America, but it's more than just racism. It's more than just racism and slavery. It's what goes beyond that is it's Christianity. Christianity is the problem, and white people are the problem, okay? White people who, with their Christianity, decided that it was okay just to show up and tell everybody else how to live their life. And if they didn't do what they wanted them to do, they killed them or they tortured them. So Christianity really can be put to fault for the Western world being the way it is. Now, here's the thing about the Bible. The Bible, if we could break down the Bible just for a second. If you pick up a Bible and you read a Bible as literature, okay? If everybody could just pick up a copy of the Bible and read it for what it is, which is literature, stories that we're trying to teach a moral and ethical message or produce a particular political agenda, then the world would be a different place. But the fact that people take the Bible as the literal word of God, that literally our universe was created in 7 days, or 6 days, and on the seventh day, God was tired, so he took a break, had a margarita. That the fact that people actually believe that this little book is the inspired word of God and that these people were talking to God, instead of reading the book as literature, and appreciating it for what it is, because, you know, you read Lord of the Rings, you read the Bible, you read it, it's very interesting, it's full of all the things Americans love, violence and rape and torture and racism and ethnic purity and homophobia and misogyny, all the things people love in this country. Well, the Bible is full of it, okay? The Bible is full of all that garbage, and people love that shit. But to believe that that is actually the way the world actually operates and works is just amazing to me. that people believe this stuff. Because it's absolutely quite clear, 100%, that the God of the Old Testament and the God of the God of the New Testament are completely two different gods. The God of Israel, that God, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever you want to call that person, is a completely different God than the God that was preached of by this person that they call Christ. Completely different person. Different God, different deity, not the same agenda, not the same personality type by any means. But why people can read, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you the reason why this persists. It is because of cultural bias and it's because of the way you were raised, okay? Listen to me. If you're a Christian and you're trying to listen to me and you got somewhat of an open mind, even if the door is just cracked, I need you to listen to me for a second. The reason why you believe the Bible is a story that has a beginning, has a middle, and will have an ultimate end is because that is what you learned. That is what you were taught. That is what you believe. You believe that the Bible is a cohesive story because all of the books of the Bible that make no damn sense, that aren't connected with one another. Some of them are not completely disconnected from one another. Completely different books. Not even teaching the same thing. Not even talking about the same God. Not even holding the same moral and ethical standards, okay? The reason why you believe that this is a cohesive story that has a beginning, has a middle, and has an end is because that's what you've been taught. How can I say that? Why can I say that? Because when I was born and raised in the Jehovah's Witness cult, the Watchtower organization, I was only allowed to read the Bible that they produced because their New World translation of the Holy Scriptures was the accurate version of the Bible. And you might be allowed to buy other Bibles, but you need to be studying out of the New World translation. And the only people that have the ability to interpret the Bible are Jehovah's Witnesses. They are the only true religion, and all other Christians ain't shit. Because if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, you are not surviving the end of the world because you are not part of God's chosen people. This whole concept of being God's chosen people, given divine right to rule over everyone else, is the solid motif that starts in the Bible from the beginning and ends in Revelation. So the big motif of the Bible really is about God's chosen people. And who has the right to tell everybody else what to do? So as a Jehovah's Witness, growing up in this cult, right? Other people, they look at this cult and they say, these people are crazy. Why do they behave like that? Like their Bible, the Bible doesn't make sense. Every single scholar, biblical scholar, says that New World Translation is garbage. It doesn't make any sense. They point that out, that is not the proper translation of it's so full of errors, right? But growing up in that cult, I believed that it was the truth. And at one point in time, I was really hardcore into it too. Woke up every morning, put on my three-piece suit, grabbed my Watchtower, my Bible, walked out on the street, banged on people's door, told them they were going to die at Armageddon if they didn't listen to the message. I did all that. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, got the hat, got the button. Been there, done that, did that whole thing. And I believed that because I was not willing to open my eyes and say, you know what? Maybe what I believe isn't true. Maybe I need to listen to somebody else. Maybe I need to get a third-party opinion. Maybe I need to get some objectivity over here as to why my life is in the toilet, right? Maybe I need some objectivity. Maybe I need to be more educated. But see, a cult does not want you to be educated. They absolutely don't want you getting your media and your news from anyone else. Fox News, everybody, Fox News. Tucker Carlson, everybody, Tucker Carlson. We want everybody to be tuning in at the same time every night to the Empire news station to listen to the opinions of people that lie to your fucking face about reality and about and spout fiction and play into the feelings of people, of a disenfranchised group of people that can be highly easily manipulated. And we want everybody tuning into the state TV to listen to this guy, you know, misogynist, racist, everything else, homophobic, absolute, you know, ready for the dictatorship. We want to listen to this guy. We want everybody listening to this guy. We don't want them getting their news from anywhere else. And that's what happens when you're part of a cult. When you join a cult, there's a very, very small group of people at the very, 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 very top of the organization. It's that trickle-down effect. It's that pyramid scheme. We got a small group of people at the very top that actually know what's going on, that's pulling the strings, the puppets, directing the people. And we've got all the people being fed a steady stream of misinformation or whatever rhetoric we're trying to put out, propaganda, whatever political and religious propaganda we're trying to put it out. We need to keep that constantly being fed. There has to be a constant source of this feeding of misinformation in order for everybody who's disenfranchised and mad to stay along for the ride. So Donald Trump comes around, and all of the white people were mad that we had a black president. You know, America wasn't white anymore. It wasn't white enough for them. You know, we finally crossed the line here. And over that 8 years that Obama was president, believe me, those people out there, the Christians and the conservative white Christians and these people that follow Trump, they went to work. And they played on the emotions and the feelings of people who are angry, disenfranchised, having financial problems, and they just continued to drill at these people until finally, 8 years later, we have reached the perfect zeitgeist, okay? We have come to the perfect zeitgeist, same way Hitler came into power. Perfect zeitgeist for this guy Trump to show up and run his fucking mouth and speak the language of the poorest people in this country and the most uneducated people in this country. The poorest, the most uneducated, the most disenfranchised, the most arrogant, the most ignorant, and especially to racist people who are desperately afraid that this country is no longer going to be ran and operated by white people in order to keep the power structure in. And that's it. And Donald Trump came along like a bull. Like a wrecking ball, like a bull in a china shop, okay? And he came in to destroy. He came in to destroy everything, and that's what people wanted. People want that. People wanted that. All of the grab the woman by the pussy and all of this, I'm rich, I got money, I can do whatever I want. No, I don't have to, I'm above the law. I don't have to follow any kind of rule of law. That's what people want. Donald Trump came in as a vigilante politician. And people said, you know what? This is going to get stuff done. That's what they said. This is what we want. Finally, we have someone in government that speaks our language. Okay? Because, and I have to blame the media for this, and I have to blame television for this, but you know, we are a generation that were born and raised on Geraldo. Jerry Springer. You know, Andy Warhol basically made a prophecy that, you know, whenever people turned on television to watch stupid-ass people live their stupid-ass lives, society would come to an end. And he was right, because the rise of all of this, the rise of Jerry Springer, excuse me, the rise of, what did they call that? Reality television, all the reality TV that's out there, And the acceptance of all of this crazy bullshit that we see people doing, all the crazy behavior, stupid-ass behavior humans are involved in relationships, and the shit that they get involved, we decided that this was okay. Because white culture, I know a lot of people say white people don't have culture. White people do have culture. It's called Jerry Springer. It's called Geraldo. It's called reality television. And that's what people have been raised on now for about, I don't know, 20 years or so. 25 years. No, longer than that. Oh my God, 30 years. 30 years, 35 years. I don't remember how old I was when Geraldo and Oprah Winfrey, longer than that. Starting with the talk shows, the trash garbage talk shows, and the soap operas, and then later the reality TV. We have been bred and fed to believe that this kind of behavior is okay, that this is the world that we live in. And so when Donald Trump came along and ran for president and talked shit to everyone, he spoke a language that people understood. And they said, yeah, we'll get behind this. We'll back this. We're ready for this. Disenfranchised, arrogant, and ignorant people decided that they were going to fall in line with this personality cult. And now, everybody, you see, this is what we got. This is what it's come to. We have a perfect example in the time of the Buddha, a perfect example in the time of this man Jesus, a perfect example in this time period of Donald Trump and the Trump era, the Trump empire. The Trump empire. It's very easy to see how personality cults rise to power, take over, and everybody just goes along with it. We're just going to go along with it. This is how things are now. We're just going to go along with it. And let me tell you something about white people. This is something that's interesting. And when I sit and talk to my black friends about white people, when I sit around and I talk to my black friends about white people, there's something interesting, okay, about white people. White people will fall in line. Why do white people have such a power structure that is able to maintain its level of racism and its level of fuckery? It's because when push comes to shove, white people, they will fall in line. They will make a wall over issues. They will fall in line. They will make a wall. And they will do it. They just will snap into place like no other ethnic group will. White people have a power structure that when push comes to shove, white people, based on prejudice and based on racism, will fall into line really, really quick. And I'm trying to think of an example of that, when white people will get on board on any particular issue. There was something I was talking to my friend Donnie about the other day. I feel like, I know exactly what I want to use, okay? Now, for one, let's talk about critical race theory just for a second. For one thing, critical race theory is not something that you teach to toddlers. It's not something you teach in kindergarten. It's not something that you teach to high school students. Whenever we talk about critical race theory, we're talking about college. We're talking about a very specific kind of examining racism within the context of law, okay? So critical race theory isn't something you teach to 10 and 11 and 12, 13-year-old kids, okay? Anybody who thinks that is stupid. They haven't even taken a moment to do a Google search to find out what critical race theory is. But there's this idea now, there's this concept that we don't want to teach real history because we don't want white kids feeling bad about themselves. And this happens even with people who claim to be allies, okay? There are a lot of white people out there that are all about, Black Lives Matter, 100%. We live in a corrupt system. Yes, it's very, very racist. It needs to change. No, police officers shouldn't be able to like basically break people's necks and like kill them in the street and get away with it. We understand that this is bad. We need to change it. But when push comes to shove and you break it down, those people that say they're allies, they will snap back into that white line really, really, really quick. And a perfect issue of that is having children taught the truth about why the world is the way it is. It is white folks' fucking fault and Christians' fucking fault that the world looks the way it does today. It's taken 2,000 years to get to this point, but the reason why the world looks the way it is because of Christianity and because of white people, and just stopping and acknowledging that the greatest catastrophe in all of human history, is the transatlantic slave trade and the wiping out of the indigenous peoples of the Americas. The greatest tragedy that ever befell mankind, the transatlantic slave trade, is what had happened, that proves that white people are pretty fucking vile and are okay with it. And we absolutely do not want white kids feeling guilt. We don't want them feeling ancestral guilt. We don't want our white kids to feel bad about themselves and look back at their ancestors, their white ancestors, and consider them to be bad people. And I don't care. So if you're black, let me just put this out there real fucking fast. If you're black or brown or a person of color or you're an indigenous person or anybody, you want to really, 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 really find out whether or not the white motherfucker you're talking to is a true ally or whether or not they're someone who's just pretending to be an ally, ask them whether or not white children deserve to know that their ancestors were racist and rapist and colonizers, and the reason the world is the way it is and we're in the situation that we're in is because white Christians did that. Ask them if they are okay with that. Ask them if they'll sit down and tell their white children about the sins of their forefathers. Boom. There you go. That's how you find out, folks. That's how all my black friends and all my indigenous friends can find out really, really fucking fast whether or not a white person is on your side or not. And 100% I believe that everyone needs to open their eyes and be taught why the world is the way it is, and the behavior of white people must be called out, because this system is going to continue. That people, you got to get ready, okay? When I told you to grab a hold of your ass cheeks and spread them wide and bend over, that's exactly what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that we're in for a rocky road. Things are not going to get better. Things are not going to get better. Things are going to get rougher before they potentially get better. But I don't want to make predictions. I just wanted to point out to everybody some of the key factors that brought Donald Trump to power and why it's so easy for me to compare Donald Trump to Jesus Christ, you know, and even Jesus Christ to Buddha. It's because when you understand why things happen, then you can sit down and you can meditate on it, and you can have perspective. And we're going to get to the very end of this particular podcast because I've been talking a lot. There's so many things I'd like to say, but we're just going to keep it to this today. I think that Bernie Sanders was totally right. Education. The only way to make the world a better place is through education. Knowledge, wisdom, teaching children how to read, teaching them to want to read, to pick up books, to use Google, to watch YouTube, to watch history, learn about history, learn about sociolinguistics, learn about science, archaeology, understanding the dynamics between ethnic groups, religion, philosophy. These are things that children should be learning about, and they should be learning about it the way things happened. And education and being educated is what changes the world and what makes a society great, okay? Look at the ancient Greeks, okay? Look at the ancient Greeks. Look at that. I'm getting a little message here from Anchor telling me that the maximum recording time for a segment is 60 minutes. So at 45 minutes and 37 seconds in, I have to say that education is the most important thing that we could gift our children to make the world a better place. And I would like all of you to think about that and work on that and think about telling your children the truth about how the world actually works. So anyway, I hope you had a good time today. I hope you like listening to me run my mouth. Maybe you learned something. Maybe this is something you can share and talk about with your friends. Once again, your opinion about me and your feelings about me don't fucking matter. And if you're mad, you can be mad, you can stay mad, and you can die mad about it. Y'all have a great day now.